The sound seminar you're about to hear was recorded at the Poetry Center of the New York YM, YWHA, on February 16, 1970. This program presents Noam Chomsky speaking on Government in the Future. Here is Noam Chomsky.
I think it's useful to set up as a framework for discussion four somewhat idealized positions with regard to the role of the state in an advanced industrial society. I want to call these positions first classical liberal, second libertarian socialist, third state socialist, fourth state capitalist, and I want to consider each in turn. Also, I'd like to make clear my own point of view in advance so you can evaluate and judge what I'm saying. I think that the libertarian socialist concepts, and by that I mean a range of thinking that extends from left-wing Marxism through anarchism, I think that these are fundamentally correct and that they are the proper and natural extension of classical liberalism into the era of advanced industrial society. In contrast, it seems to me that the ideology of state socialism, that is what has become of Bolshevism, and of state capitalism, the modern welfare state, these, of course, are dominant in the industrial countries and the industrial societies, but I believe that they are regressive and highly inadequate social theories, and a large number of our really fundamental problems stem from a kind of incompatibility and inappropriateness of these social forms to a modern industrial society. Well, then let me consider these four points of reference in sequence, beginning with the classical liberal point of view. Classical liberalism asserts as its major idea an opposition to all but the most restricted and minimal forms of state intervention in personal or social life. Well, this conclusion is quite familiar. However, the reasoning that leads to it is less familiar and I think a good deal more important than the conclusion itself. One of the earliest and most brilliant expositions of this position is in Wilhelm von Humboldt's Limits of State Action, which was written in 1792. Though not published for 60 or 70 years after that. In his view, the state tends to, make man an instrument to serve its arbitrary ends, overlooking his individual purposes. And since man is in his essence a free, searching, self-perfecting being, it follows that the state is a profoundly anti-human institution. That is, its actions, its existence, are ultimately incompatible with the full harmonious development of human potential in its richest diversity, hence incompatible with what Humboldt and in the following century Marx, Bakunin, Mill, and many others, what they see as the true end of man. And for the record, I think that this is an accurate description. The modern conservative tends to regard himself as the lineal descendant of the classical liberal in this sense, but I think that that can be maintained only from an extremely superficial point of view, as one can see by studying more carefully the fundamental ideas of classical libertarian thought, as expressed, in my opinion, in its most profound form by Humboldt. I think the issues are of really quite considerable contemporary significance, and if you don't mind what may appear to be a somewhat antiquarian excursion, I'd like to expand on them. For Humboldt, as for Rousseau, and before him the Cartesians, man's essential attribute is his freedom. Quote, to inquire and to create, these are the centers around which all human pursuits more or less directly revolve. But, he goes on to say, all moral culture springs solely and immediately from the inner life of the soul and can never be produced by external and artificial contrivances. The cultivation of the understanding, as of any of man's other faculties, is generally achieved by his own activity, his own ingenuity, or his own methods of using the discoveries of others. Well, from these assumptions, quite obviously, an educational theory follows, and he develops it, but I won't pursue it, but also far more follows. Humboldt goes on to develop at least the rudiments of a theory of exploitation and of alienated labor that suggests, in significant ways, I think, the early Marx. So Humboldt, in fact, continues these comments that I made, that I quoted about the cultivation of understanding through spontaneous action in the following way. He says, man never regards what he possesses as so much his own as what he does. And the laborer who tends a garden is perhaps in a truer sense its owner than the listless voluptuary who enjoys its fruits. And since truly human action is that which flows from inner impulse, it seems as if all peasants and craftsmen might be elevated into artists, that is, men who love their labor for its own sake, improve it by their own plastic genius and inventive skill, and thereby cultivate their intellect, ennoble their character, and exalt and refine their pleasures. And so humanity would be ennobled by the very things which now, though beautiful in themselves, so often tend to degrade it. Freedom is undoubtedly the indispensable condition without which even the pursuits most congenial to individual human nature can never succeed in producing such salutary influences. Whatever does not spring from a man's free choice, or is only the result of instruction and guidance, does not enter into his very being, but remains alien to his true nature. He does not perform it with truly human energies, but merely with mechanical exactness. And if a man acts in a mechanical way, reacting to external demands or instruction, rather than in ways determined by his own interests and energies and power, he says, we may admire what he does, but we despise what he is. For Humboldt, then, man is born to inquire and create. And when a man or a child chooses to inquire,